podcast where we explore faith in ways that might get you kicked out of most churches. I'm your host, Mike.
And I'm Amira.
And today we are back with one of our favorite Faith Uncut family members. I don't know what to say with your titles. I want to say the Reverend Doctor, but it's Nicholas Gaines, the Nick Gaines.
Welcome, Nick.
Welcome back, man.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
It's so good to have you back here.
Thank you. It's good to be with y'all. It's so good.
Yeah, it's something that we've been trying to do for a long time. Like, I think we went all last year without having a discussion.
Y'all didn't talk to me. Y'all were like fighting with me. We didn't talk all year.
Now you know we are in a Panasonic. There was no such thing. This Panera bread persists. Baby,
listen, this Panera bread thing ain't
it's awful. Okay.
I'm just kidding. We weren't fighting so long.
All right, so we are here to talk about healing, and we got the perfect person to do it. So Nick is going to walk us through. Now, here's the thing. We've been in this pandemic for over a year. Well, almost a year, coming up on a year. And that's forced us into some new places, some new ways of interacting that we haven't been used to. We have taken whatever issues, traumas that we've had, we brought them internally into our homes, and then we are reaching out to other people who have done the same thing. So everyone's interacting in this technology space.
Yeah.
With all of this stuff. And we can't get together. We can't do any of the things that we need to do to work through some of this stuff. So we're exposed through online, more conflict, more trauma, things like that, as we're managing our own stuff. And so it's kind of this weird space where we need healing. Healing is difficult right now. And we're seeing, in some cases, how damaged some of us are. And so we wanted to, as we were in this season of Faith Uncut, do some or provide some resources to everyone to help us on our journey towards restoring healing, wholeness, and in our spiritual journeys. And so that's what the conversation is about today. The interesting thing about the technology is that it brings us together and we're disconnected in this environment. So
absolutely,
we can't come together, but we can watch each other. But what we're watching is snapshots of people's lives that does not provide us good insight into what it is. So I don't know what that's like living your life online as a snapshot for a year. That's an experiment that we've never had before.
But we're doing it.
We're figuring stuff out. We're adapting. And we're getting all of this new stimuli in. And how do we deal with this? How are we affected by it? Like, everything that I see is either in my house or online.
Wow.
And that's not really a normal way of living. That's something that we're learning how to do together. And so we're going to talk a little bit about how that works today.
Okay.
All right. So, Nick, let's talk a little bit about communication. My initial question is, after years of speaking to each other virtually, do you believe that we are more or less effective communicating?
That's a great question. You know, I think that we're learning different methods of communication right now. We are, you know, when we speak in person, because we know that communication is both verbal and nonverbal. So when we speak to each other in person, when we were in meetings, I'm used to being able to look at, you know, I can look at you and see what's going on in that way. Now that we are separated and we're doing virtual stuff, we're doing a lot of phone things, I'm assuming that lots of us are picking up on nonverbal cues. So now you can hear the discontentment in somebody's voice. You can hear the fear in somebody's voice. I can hear the frustration in somebody's voice based on how they're breathing, right? So you can hear that. You can hear fatigue.
Yep.
You know, I'm a high school administrator, and one of the things that I do in my work is behavioral health, social emotional learning, those things. One of the things that is the wildest to me to see is that, you know, I work at a school of a couple thousand kids. We've been in the building since August, and we have like 5 different lunches. And the reason we do that is because there's so many kids, we got to, you know, filter them through. But the one thing that is consistent amongst every lunch is that the kids come in, they get their food, and then they all pull out their phone and watch TV, watch a movie. They don't talk to each other anymore. So in a lunchroom full of kids, full of hundreds of kids, we've got the clear partitions up so we can see each other. But even in that, the communication is not the same. And so I think about the fact that we're a year into a pandemic and our children have learned. Like, yes, we're having a hard time with the Zooming, but think about our babies who can literally see each other, watch each other, and they're deciding to engage in their phone. They don't even talk to each other. That impacts even how they show up in the classroom. So now when kids are in the classroom, you'll notice that teachers are literally doing all types of tricks just to get kids to like look at them, just to get kids to engage. Teachers are trying to say, hey, turn your camera on for me. I just need your camera for 5 minutes. Think about the way that our kids don't even want to be looked at, watched.
Yeah.
You know?
One thing that I've noticed is that the pandemic kind of just, it snatched a rug out from under all of us. So if you had questionable habits around communication and interaction, they chased you in the house. They chased you into this virtual environment. Yeah. And much to what you're saying about kids who are already something that we marvel at as they develop, I don't know what it's going to take for them to unlearn some of this, because some of it is mimicking behavior. We know that kids, they will mimic the behavior of their peers because they see it. But adults are the same way. You know, I've seen in organizational culture, toxic culture chasing you into the virtual environment. So to your point of picking up on those nonverbal cues of tone, fatigue, irritation. People are, in where you are, you're in the building, but in a great many areas, including where we are, people are still trying to like balance working from home and teaching their kids or, and managing their online school or whatever. It's just a lot. On the flip side, though, I do feel like because of the fatigue and because of the irritation and because of the lack of patience, I think people are trying to say more of what they mean and meaning what they say. They're not wasting time around the pleasantries of overuse, but politically correct all the time. And we're seeing how that's playing out on so many different facets. I just think that our communication skills are under a microscope right now. And not everybody respected how important communication was. I say it all the time. You got people who have whole ass families that don't talk. They don't interact. They don't sit down for dinner. And then it's like under the pressure of this happening in our society, this the most some people have seen their families ever.
Ever. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And this is going to shape a whole generation. So remember when the movie Wall-E came out and the overweight citizens were just in their chairs, zooming around, watching their screens, mm-hmm. and no one was talking to each other. That's what I'm thinking about as you're describing this, Nick. And one of the things that I realized in looking at my children, the adults trained for this in some capacity, meaning we would go to work, we would sit in front of a screen for X amount of time if you had that type of job, and you would be used to communicating that way on some level. Not to the extent where we're having the Zoom meetings now as much as or as frequently as we do, but children had no preparation for this. They didn't have any years of training in terms of sitting in front of a screen and receiving information and learning and interacting with each other. Right. And so I watched them struggle, and I have to be understanding of the fact that I've had 2 decades of doing this, and it's still rough for me. And they're doing it all at one time, all together, and this is just going to be a difficult thing for them.
And the other thing is that, a lot of people are like, well, you can get on TikTok, and you can be on TikTok all day. Why can't you go to your class and do what you're supposed to do? And it's like, so there's a difference, right? That those apps
absolutely.
Like the gamification, right? Like the interfacing, like you're not critically thinking. You're not processing information. You're not taking information in. You're not trying to think about how does this impact you and the world around you. Those literally are for fun and entertainment. Those literally release different endorphins when you're on them. That's different ones that happen when you're trying to conjugate a verb or when you're trying to look back in history and write a critical essay. And so when we think about, communication, I think a lot of times, as Amira said, what was happening in your home is now just magnified. Right. Mm-hmm. And I think that a lot of times because we were, you think about the fact that like you wake up, for me, my routine is like wake up, get everybody out the house ready, drop my kids off. I go to work for my 8 hours, then I come pick them up. And then like we really only have a couple hours at night, bath, homework, watch a show, play a game, and then it's bedtime, basically. Mm-hmm. Now we're going from maybe 3.5-4 hours of contact a day to we're always together. Yeah. And so what happens is that a lot of the things that you weren't doing before, a lot of the maybe the weak spots, a lot of the trigger points, those things were not activated because you weren't in the space to do it. So a lot of times when we talk about communication, things that were happening before pandemic. So maybe we would be shaming and criticizing or lecturing the kids about things. Or, a lot of times we would rely really heavily on punishment. Like, if you don't do this thing, I'm going to do this. We would have maybe situations where we would be blaming each other for the things that were happening. So you'd be blaming, you tell your wife, well, if you would just get these kids together, this wouldn't be happening. or sometimes we would be modeling behaviors that were maybe impulsive. We'd be modeling behaviors to our kids that were disrespectful just in terms of like the adult communication in the room, right? And so our children don't learn by what we tell them. They learn by the clarity of our example. And so our children have watched us do all these things, and now they're trying to make sense of that, trying to learn. And then it's like, so what does this mean for me? And so when we talk about communication, I think that, you know, when I work with families, I talk a lot about communication, and it's not this like leave it to Beaver, you know, family matters type thing. Like that might be what works for you. But for me, it boils down to three things, right? So I look at behavior. How do we model positive behavior that is something that we would want to be treated that way? It's a way that when we're our highest, our best, our most rested selves, how are we behaving towards each other? You know, I think about language. What are the words that we're using? Right? Like, what are the tone that we're using the words in? What's the reason that we're using those words? Why? It goes really back to like growing up. Like, you didn't like when your mom called you stupid. You didn't like when your mom said you wasn't going to be shit. You didn't like when your grandma reminded you was just like your ain't shit daddy. Right. So why do we then use those words in such power with our children? Mm-hmm. Right. And it's because we know what the response is going to be, and we're going to manipulate them to get what we want. So I think about language having this effect on kids, that if we use harmful language, that it's going to really damage our kids' egos. It's going to undermine their self-esteem. And then I look at listening. Like, most times when we're trying to communicate, we're not listening. We're talking, but we're not listening. And so a lot of times the cues that we would give, that our kids would give us, the cues that our significant other is trying to give us, the cues that our mom who lives with us is trying to give us, we don't hear because we are literally always used to dominating. And so it's weird to be in a space in which we're now actually receiving the fullness of what somebody is saying, not what we think they're going to say, or not what we want them to say.
Right. So Amira said something that is now I'm a little worried about, because Amira brought up the point that we haven't been around each other this much. Like, I don't get the breaks that I would normally get, where I would leave the house for 8 to 12 hours a day before I see my children again. And now, understanding what you're saying, Nick, about the children learning the things that we communicate through our actions, now I'm starting to wonder, what are they learning from me now that they can't get away from me and I'm doing the things that I would normally do? So for instance, at work, I'm in a meeting, you know, I'm working, sitting at the computer, and I can't really interact with them, but they see me. And so I have to be in a position where I have to let them know, hey, listen, daddy's in a meeting, I'm gonna come see you in a minute. But each time, I'm aware of the fact that they're seeing that I don't have time for them. Now, normally, I wouldn't have time for them because I'd be at work. But now I'm here at home, and I'm looking at them and telling them I don't have time for them, which I don't. And that's a difficult thing for me to work through, because I don't know how to, I guess coming back to them after the fact is important, which I do, but they see so many instances of me not having that time now that we're all in the same space.
Can I challenge your communication?
Okay.
I don't think, I don't agree with the fact that you don't have time for them. You do have time for them. But what you're doing is the time right now that you're spending working is, it's a different kind of time. Right. So instead of telling your kids that daddy doesn't have time for you, which is completely incorrect.
Well, yeah,
daddy is. No, and I know what I'm saying, though, is just words are a spell. Yeah. Right? The order of words are a spell. Right. So we're classes, yeah, use our words. And so the baby hears, the child hears, daddy doesn't have time for you. And that's not what it is. So instead, it's like, hey, daddy is working for the next 3 hours and daddy is working on this project. So you're telling the kids what you're doing. Now, again, the kid may not give a care in the intricacies of your work, but so I'll use myself. So I got this fellowship, and in this fellowship, I'm going to be doing advocacy, legislative advocacy at the state Senate level for Texas for kids. And I'm going to be working with senators, legislators, state board of education to make some policy, substantial policy changes. Now, I had a meeting that started at 7 o'clock that was going to go till 9:30. My sons, I usually put them in bed at 7:45, because we have to wake up mad early the next day. And I don't like to start the day yelling at them. So I need you to get to sleep so we can have enough time to do what we need to do. So at 7 o'clock, at 6:55, I had to get on to the call. And so we watched the show, we ate dinner, we did our snuggle thing on the couch. And then I said, all right, daddy's got a meeting and you're going to get 30 minutes of time on your iPad before you go to bed, because I have this meeting. I never told them I didn't have time. I just said, daddy has this meeting and this is what it's about. Then I brought them in. I told them they could sit on the floor by me. They could sit on the couch. by me while I was doing the thing so they could see exactly what I was doing. So they could see that the time I was spending wasn't because I didn't have time for them. It was solely because I had to work. I had to do this thing. Then when I got done with it, I was like, what did you hear? I asked them what they heard while I was working. And so then that gave time for them to ask me questions about my work. And then it gave me time to tell them like, yo, this is why I'm doing this thing. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't like you don't have time. It actually, I brought my children into my work. Mm-hmm. And I asked them like, what did you hear because of this work? And like, so when daddy goes to talk to these senators, what do you think I should say? You know, and it's bringing them in. And I think those are just small ways that our children can see that like, my daddy loves me and my daddy's working so he can pay all these bills. You know, as opposed to like, I can't be with you for 12 hours.
Well, in my situation, I am the child. Like, I'm working with my elders the way that you have your children in your home. I'm in the home with my elders. And one thing that I've realized that this whole pandemic has kind of pushed forward is this inability to separate and get away even for our own comfort. Mm-hmm. And what I've realized is that some things have kind of bubbled up to the surface, some resistant things, some things that have been well hidden in how I communicate with friends and family and the things that I'm comfortable with talking about. Because see, everybody's kind of uncomfortable right now. So I feel like if people can be a little bit vulnerable, they are. They're choosing who in their friendship group can they be their real selves with, because all of a sudden I have all of these hours of FaceTime with an audience where maybe I didn't realize how much of a representative I was bringing or how much of a armor I was bringing into how I interact with them. So it has brought some stuff up. And I know it's happened in so many different relationships. You know, people started the pandemic with people that they're not finishing it with. Marriages are over. New relationships have started. People have come clear about why their interaction with certain parts of their family are what they are. But what I have appreciated or tried to appreciate is that this has given me a chance to, like, you know how you in your home, you have that corner or that space in your home where you like, I'm gonna clean that up. I'm gonna get to it. And you never really get to it. I feel like this has kind of forced us to get to some things that when we could move around and go to Starbucks when we wanted and go shopping when we wanted and take the flight when we, you know, let me go get a quick weekend in Puerto Rico or something. You left that corner of your mind, of your emotions untended to. And this has kind of forced those things up. So it's like they were dealing with their mess before, but under this new, you know, this in this new paradigm, they are really trying to either deal with their mess or they're hyper aware of how much they do to not deal with it. And those eyes, you know, your kids looking at how you manage your work. It's very easy to tell me to do my homework, but see, now I can look at you and realize you got time management issues yourself, right? And what is a child going to do but bring that up? Like, well, you don't do all your work when you say you're going to do it, or, you know, you're not paying attention all the time. You cut your camera off. So there's a lot of not only holding accountable, but see, your kids don't see you those 8 hours. When I'm working with my elders in the home, they didn't see how I was working, but sure enough, my family situation forced me into a environment where I'm working with my uncle. And my uncle, when I was growing up, was my standard bearer. So when I was in here with my uncle, I got so much work done because I responded to him as, this is somebody who can get this work out of me. He does not work with me. He doesn't, but we were working from home together. So what I'm saying is, you know, people are working through some of the stuff that maybe they haven't worked through, these bad habits that you can maintain with your schedules and with your distractions. All of that stuff is falling away. So I'm not surprised that we've seen people reach out for support and reach out for authenticity and genuine interactions, because it's almost like, I don't have time to put my cover on all the time. I don't have time to put my mask on all the time. You know, that first 2 months of Zoom was real cute. Month six, month 10 has been some, you know, BS. So I think we're seeing some of that too.
So I want to talk about how we've had to learn to manage and navigate the stress that we do have. So we have the stress of the pandemic and everything that comes with that. Black people have had the stress of this racial tension coming to a boil again in the country and everything that comes with that, you know, stress with school, you know, learning from home and all of that stuff. But you don't have all of the tools at your disposal that you had before, meaning you can't go to a happy hour or a brunch or Like I remember on Good Times, James would always go to the pool hall when they needed money, and I just was like, he would always come back with the money. Like the family get to an emergency, he would go to the pool hall and come save the day. And I'm like, well, why you ain't stay in the pool hall? But we don't. He doesn't have the pool hall in this situation. Like he just can't go anywhere. And so we've all had to learn new ways to do this inside the house with the children there, or if you have them, or your partner there, or just yourself. And so how have you seen people navigating this new way of resolving conflict or managing stress?
I think, again, you know, people are doing the best that they can with the tools that they have. Mm-hmm. And I'm always a person, you know, I do these monthly workshops with my school district, and it's just trying to give parents like a tangible tool, because a lot of times it's like, well, you should be doing better, but it's like, how? And how do you have time when you're trying to, you know, the families that I work with, largely Black and Hispanic, are working multiple jobs, right? And they're working, you know, the Black families I work with usually work two jobs. A lot of the Hispanic families work three jobs. The children are at home trying to do school, and they're also managing, taking care of their brothers and sisters, trying to. So you've got a teenager managing digital learning for themselves and one, two, three other people. So then you might have a grandparent or an older aunt at home who is, you know, sickly, but you know, they're trying to make a warm meal, one warm meal a day. And so I bring all this into account, because all this stress then shows back up. Everybody comes back in the hub, and then we try to be family. And it's hard to be family when you have all these external stressors, right? So we've got our trauma that impacts our body, our emotions, our behavior, our cognition. We now have pandemic trauma that's been here for a year, right? In addition to miscommunication, in addition to maybe wanting to get divorced, in addition to wanting grandma to get out of the house because she gets on your damn nerves, in addition to your daughter getting her period, in addition to your child teething, like all this is a big confluffery in the house. Mm-hmm. And so I invite families who are listening, people listening right now, is just to take a breath. Honestly. It's to take a breath, because I think that when we think about the enormity of the task of fixing something, it's just like, I can't. You just let the shit keep happening, because it's like, it's easier to let it keep happening than to stop it and say, we got to address this, you know? And so I think that the first step in this is just really trying to evaluate, like, what is happening here? Mm-hmm. What's happening here? Asking that little question, like, what is happening here? And right. Asking yourself, like, what do I want? What's happening? What do I want to happen? What do we want to happen, right? And then how do we aggressively or gently, depending on what needs to happen, move towards that? But I will say that, like, what's increased right now because people are at home is abuse, right? So the babies that I work with, they were having situations where now sexual and physical abuse has heightened. It was happening in the home before, but now it's heightened because everybody's in the house together, right? People, parents who had drinking problems or maybe prescription drug problems are using more infrequently. The students I work with that are LGBTQIA+, they're, you know, school used to be a safe place because you could at least come and be out for 8 hours to the dungeon of oppression. And now it's like, you got to deal with all that stuff. So my first thing is to collectively just take a breath and assess where we are.
There has to be courage in that assessment. Some people ask the question and they don't have the courage to see the answer through. You know, imagine asking what needs to be done and somebody saying we probably shouldn't be under the same roof with one another for our health, or, you know, what needs to be done. And it's, I understand that the job market is, you know, bullshit, but we also need more resources in the home. What can we do and what needs to be done? And people are finally trying to work through the wound that they've been carrying in the center of their heart, but they always had an outlet, like we say, a distraction that kept them from doing that particular work. So you weren't getting any support for it, but you were going to your church building and experiencing a release, what you thought was a healthy emotional release that helped you cope with what you got going on. And like you say, people who use their out of house time to get in touch with who they may have thought they were authentically. You know, masks are amazing because you assume that the mask goes on when you go outside. A lot of people didn't realize that their mask really went on when they came in. when it came around other people. I'm just aware of, you know, and think about what we're aware of because we are tuned into it. We know. Just think about the occupations that people have. You are in, let's say, a tough job like law enforcement or corrections or something. So when you go outside, that's actually the mask. You come inside, you are softer. Or what if you felt like you were more the disciplinarian or something? And when you come inside, you put on the mask of, I'm very soft, I'm very approachable, I'm very gentle. And people are now dealing with behaviors under the roof or in the pod that they never dealt with out of you before. I think people are intimidated by their authentic selves. But again, to the point, I'm not, as those, you know, bad things rise that you mentioned, Nick, I also know that people are reaching out for counselors and therapists at a rate that they never have before. They are, you know, like we said, seeking this authenticity. And I think that somehow, some way, I feel like even across our social media, we've given each other permission to have a miraculous and wondrous healing if that's what it takes for you to maintain your life. People post inspirational quotes and things. They've become parts of groups. They have revisited bonds that they've had in their lives, fraternities, sororities, social groups, affinity groups, and they're looking for something real. So I feel like when you say you're giving parents a tool, you're giving them permission to stop, breathe, and assess. Sometimes you don't realize that you've never been given that space until it's something that you have to take, you have to demand.
And I want to jump in the conversation for a few moments. Mm-hmm. One is that I think once we take that breath, because I think what you said, Amira, is real. What do you do with the fact that, like, the partner that you've been with for 15, 20, 25 years, you realize that, like, not only do you not love, but you're not fulfilled and you're not happy. And it's easy to be like, well, just get your shit and go. But it's like, I mean, our lives are entrapped at this mm-hmm. point.
Yeah, not just entangled, but entrapped.
So I think that the first part, like you said, is that is knowing that in healing work, that it's messy, right? It's easy to put a bandage on a wound. It's harder to take that bandage off, to clean the wound, to get inside the wound, to pull out what needs to happen, to rewrap it, have the pressure, have the stuff that's uncomfortable so that wound or that bone can correctly heal. And mm-hmm. so one of the things that I encourage parents to do when we look at healing, before you can heal, before we can even think about maybe healing the family structure, is healing our individual selves. Mm-hmm. About this idea of parenting. And reparenting is the idea that you are giving yourself not only what you didn't have, but what you needed as an adult. And so I just want to ask the listeners a few questions. Like, yo, what are ways that you were spoken to that didn't make you feel seen? Mm. Or loved? What are ways that as a child that you were spoken to that didn't make you feel seen, heard, or loved? From there, I want to ask, why did it make you feel that way? When your dad yelled at you, when your mom said something to you and you didn't feel, because there's these moments when we were kids that when people talked to us, we felt small. And so what I'm asking the listeners to do is to go back inward. And I know this work is courageous work, as you said, Amira, but it's like, we can't, when we think about repositioning our family structures, when we think about showing up differently at work as our highest selves, we have to go back into that wounded child that we were so that we can pull out and extract, so that we can then heal that person, so that we can then work to show up as our highest, fullest, whole selves, right? So why did it make you feel that way? And then the next question that I ask is like, what did you need, right? I want you to identify for yourself, what was it that you felt like you needed? Maybe you wanted to be seen. Maybe you wanted to be told you were pretty. Maybe you wanted to be told that, like, you are the most important thing to me. Maybe you wanted somebody to say, I have time for you. So what is it that you need? And as you sit with that, I want you to think about, like, what ways have you worked to soothe that pain? our childhood is where our subconscious mind is formed. That's where we learn how to process our emotions. That's where we learn what relationships look like. We learn how to hold boundaries. We learn how to manage our emotions and our feelings. We learn what is appropriate and what's not appropriate with others. We learn all these habits and behavior. And ideally, you would like to come into the world with your parents being two self-actualized people who allow their kids to be seen and heard in their unique ways and be the individuals that they are. But that's not what it is. You came into this world with probably two or one unconscious parent, you know, who didn't have this level of self-actualization. And so a part of reparenting is trying to maybe make up for the gaps that you didn't have when you were a baby. And I want us, again, as we process this work together, I want us to think about the fact that our parents are people. Like, I could sit here and be mad as shit, right, for a bunch of reasons with my parents, but I also realized that they were doing the best that they could mm-hmm. with the tools that they had, under all the things that they were dealing with, under all the oppression they were undergoing, under all the limitations that they had, you know? And I somehow still turned out in this way. And so I want you to have some grace when you think about your parents and maybe the ways that they treated you or talked. I'm not saying to have grace for abuse. I'm not saying to have grace for the ways that trauma impacted your childhood, but to have grace for the fact that your parents were doing the best that they could, and that that is a spot that might also need some healing too. But I think we have to come out from where we are in terms of trying to fix our family dynamic and think about ourselves as individuals and asking ourselves, what do you need? What do you need? So after we've asked the questions about what are the ways that you were spoken to that didn't make you feel seen, heard, and loved, why did it make you feel that way? And then asking your adult self, what do you need? I think we also, as adults, when we think about what we need, we have to go back and ask ourselves, why? I want you to also ask yourself this question. What or whose voice are you trying to silence through your accomplishments? What and whose voice are you trying to silence through your accomplishments? I then want to take it a step deeper and ask, and this is, it might hurt here. And so I want you to be aware of the physiological signs that are happening in your body right now, where you might be sweating, right? Your stomach might be hurting. Your back might be hurting. You might be crying. That is you healing. And so when we do healing work, we have to respect all the things that come up. So the question of the day is, what trauma and what pain are you soothing through your success? What trauma and what pain are you soothing through your success? That might be a question that you start writing an answer to when you have to step away. And so I want you to give yourself the permission, because you have the agency, to step away, and you revisit it when your spirit is ready. When you come back to that piece of paper, I want you to ask yourself, in what way do you want to heal? In what way do you want to heal? The next question you're going to ask yourself, what will it look like to have healing from my childhood? What will that look like for you? And for you, it means that you have a conversation with your dad. If that means that you write an email, right, to your grandma, because you know that you guys can't have a conversation that's a two-way, so you have to be able to get all your thoughts out and then say, hey, you can respond and let's do this way, and so we can have communication. That's fine. If it's maybe taking a car trip and taking your old yearbook and pointing out different places where there were wounds, you know, when I was here, I really wanted you to be at this play. I really wanted you to be at this basketball game because this is what it would have meant to me. And to be able to feel that, then that's what healing looks like. But I want you to identify for yourself what healing looks like. And the last question in this series around reparenting is, what narrative are you retelling? What narrative are you retelling? Because I want to remind you that not only do you have power, but you have agency to make a different choice. You have agency to make a different choice. We talk a lot about our generational trauma, and we don't realize that we can literally step in the middle of this and say, this is where it's going to stop. And we give our children, we give the children that we see, we give the people around us, we give our little cousins, we give our nieces and nephews, whatever, whoever the people are, we give them an opportunity to rebuild something new. And so the question of the day is, what narrative are you retelling? And this is where it gets good, because this is where now we can maybe move away from some of the pain, and now we get to dream up what it is. And the one thing that I will say about the dream is that when we write these things down, you are essentially casting a spell. You are putting an intention into the atmosphere of what you want. And if you don't put it in the atmosphere, you can't expect it to come back to you. So I want you to be explicit in saying what you want. If that means that you want to experience love from your grandma, I want to be hugged without judgment. I want you to write, I want to be hugged without judgment. If that's like, you want your mom to look at you and your queerness and say, I see you and I love you the same, I want you to write that. But we have to write the narratives that we want to see. Period.
All right, let me clear my throat. We got some work to do. Okay. So listen, we're going to come back and finish this. We're going to let you get your homework in. We do have some work to do. Please, we're going to come back and do a second part of this episode. So please take this time to review, rewind, and think through, and actually do those prompts that Nick gave you. Because I know I'm doing them. I'm thinking through them right now. But I do want to give Nick a chance to say something else before we close this, just so we can make sure we close this out before we come back for the second part.
Third John, if you're a person of the Christian faith tradition, or if you find the Bible to be an inspiring book to you, Third John 1 and 2 is a scripture that says that, you know, my wish to you is that you are healthy in body and strong in spirit. And so when we think about the fact that we have been in a global pandemic for a year, a lot of us may not feel healthy in body, might have had COVID, might have had people in our lives who have suffered through COVID, have people who have died from COVID. And so I want to have space for that. I also want to, because I believe that words mean things, my prayer for you and my highest intention for you is that moving forward, as you do this healing work, that you are healthy in body, and that your spirit, all the things that you've managed to walk through, all the things that you've lived through, even in this 1 year, right? We've had police injustice, we've had protests, right? We've had election stuff happen, we've had election fraud, we've had a Capitol overturn, the first time that that's happened in over 100 some years, right? We've had work environments that have probably been hostile, we've had people who have lost jobs, we've had people who have had foreclosed homes, we've had relationships that have ended. I'm saying all this to say that we have been through a lot. And in all of that, I think that we give ourselves strength for saying that we're strong, but I just want you to know that in all of this, that the divine is with you, that you are wholly supported and upheld by the divine. And more importantly, I want you to know that you are worthy and deserving of good things. So I want to just do one affirmation before we go. And I want this to be something that you do every day until it gets in your spirit. So we're going to do this together. Are we ready to do this together?
Sure.
Let's go.
Okay. So I want you to say your name. So I, Nicholas.
I, Amira.
Am worthy.
Am worthy.
And deserving.
And deserving.
Of good things.
Of good things.
And for me, my three good things are healing, wholeness, and love. Hmm. I tell myself that every day, that I am worthy and deserving of healing, wholeness, and love. And so before we go, before you start your day, I want you to always ask yourself, what is my good thing? What is my good thing? So that when you say this affirmation every day, I, Amira, am worthy and deserving of good things. And then when you ask yourself, what is my good thing? You might say, it's a community that grounds and supports me. Mike, you might say that my good thing is time to do what brings me joy and pleasure. So I want you to think about what is your good thing, but remember that you are worthy and deserving of good things. So go get your good thing.
With Faith Uncut, I'm your host, Mike.
And I'm Amira.
Thank you, Nick.